apparently John Morosi talked about the idea of an Emmanuel Class A trade on MLB Network today. I'm just watching this as we go here, and it said he says the odds are against a Class A trade this year at the deadline.
Okay, so I mean ESPN a couple days ago had it at a 20% chance.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying it, odds are against. All right, and now is that because of the belief that this team is in a better spot than they were maybe a week ago? Like because it doesn't feel that way to me.
I cannot tell. I really do think the only thing that could be maybe an obstruction of a Class A trade beyond just you're kind of tangentially in the wild card race is I think it's really hard to drum up a package where somebody's going to give you what you want for him.
I don't know about that. Well, okay, I get what you're saying. From the Guardians' perspective, could they get enough of a haul
yes.
where they're like, this is worth it to me? I just think there's so many teams that need closers, so many really good teams right now that needs closers, that I think there's got to be a robust market for it. And we've talked about the stacked farm systems of some of those teams already.
Like you and I think the Dodgers. And as much as I am loath to give an affordable, dominant closer to the juggernaut in baseball, they're not just a juggernaut on the field. Their farm system is just second to none right now.
Mm-hmm.
And now the only downside of this is I honestly don't know that like the Dodgers, even in like the Mookie Betts trade. Now I know Mookie only had 1 year of control left. They didn't offer them. They don't often trade the moon for guys.
Yeah.
And so I think that might be the thing that stalls that deal is, whereas the Guardians are known for being incredibly, incredibly, incredibly frugal and picky about trades. Oh, we do have the audio of this, so we're gonna play this in just a second.
Okay.
The Dodgers are also known to be the opposite end of frugal.
Go ahead.
Here's John Morosi on a Class A trade.
I would say right now the odds are still against a Class A trade this year at the deadline, but I want to make this point. His trade value is all the way back. Guardians are one of those teams that are even when they're in at least hold or buy mode, they always keep an open ear because of their financial situation. So again, unlikely that Class A will get moved. But the circumstances do make me wonder if a team is going to overwhelm the Guardians on him. So stay tuned.
So,
That's interesting, though. He said the trade value is all the way back. That's fascinating.
Fascinating and good. We'd like to hear that.
Yeah, well, and that's part of what I was talking about and what we've discussed really over a stretch here is the idea that there are just so many teams, and I keep bringing up the Cubs and the Phillies and the Dodgers, but there's a couple teams beyond that as well that you could throw in the mix and be like, well, first off, Class A would help any team, but right now really do need some closer help.
Well, and he's the ultimate if you make this kind of move, and it's weird, like, if 2 years ago, if you had said, hey, might trade Emmanuel Class A, I know because we had the conversations. It's a near mutiny. Now I think people, and I think some of the water's being carried too much from the playoffs last year, but I think a lot of us look at this and go, well, if he can help you get the things you need in that lineup, just go do that.
I think there's two things at play here. One, yeah, the playoffs didn't help last year. And some people have soured. They've soured on the idea of Class A being as automatic, which is kind of insane because go through any stretch of Mariano Rivera's career, he'd have like, there's always 1 week every single season where you're like, what's going on with Mariano? Now, he only had that once every year, but he'd have it. And then he would walk back in and everything would be fine. But the other part of this is that Cade Smith is just so good. And I feel like people trust him so much to be that guy that I just think it kind of, you almost feel like you just have a gluttony of really strong closing options. And so Class A then just doesn't become the player that he needs to be for you.
Well, I mean, even like Espino, when he comes back, and I know it's probably next year, I don't think he's going back in the rotation. I think they're going to have to throw him into the bullpen. Alomar at Triple A. I know Andrew Walters is hurt. Andrew Walters is another future closer. Like, there aren't many organizations that at any point can have three high leverage guys in their own bullpen.
Yeah.
And then say we might have four or five legitimate guys within a year or two away as well. So, and listen, I think there's an understanding, even like, okay, Kwan, you want to sign him to an extension. Even if Emmanuel was open to an extension right now beyond, I think, the three more years of control he has, you wouldn't do it because he's a closer. At no point in Cleveland are you going to pay $20 million a year to a closer. It just wouldn't make any damn sense.
Well, and so there's a couple things. You got to play with the advantage of the fact that Class A is on that cheap contract and he's under control for a couple more years, and that does matter. And also deal with the idea that, you know, unless you're a unless you're a Wagner, unless you're a Mariano, unless you're one of these all-time, Trevor Hoffman, one of those type closers, most of the time you're just waiting for the closers just to fail you.
And here's the thing. Emmanuel might be that guy.
He might be. So,
but
you get the value you can, though.
But it doesn't change where you're at. And I just, it's so weird because there's just no part of me that wants to be like, prospects kind of might be where you are as you try and, because the one thing that I give the Guardians credit for is they've never, they attempted to 4 years ago to go through a full-scale rebuild, but some of their prospects hit soon enough that you had 2022. And even last year, oh, huge step back. They're going to be a 72-win team. Okay, then prospects stepped up. Like, they've never really had to go through a full-scale rebuild. And so I think even trading, whether it's Class A or Kwan or even some of the rental guys like Santana or Lane Thomas, I don't really consider that to be a full-scale rebuild. And it cannot be understated enough. The demand out there for everyday players, starting pitchers, or closers is so strong because there's like three teams that might actually be selling this year, and the Guardians would have the better talent between teams like that and Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Bieber thing, I think you brought this up in the pre-show meeting because we'll get to the Lauder thing in a minute.
Yeah.
The Bieber thing's fascinating. Like Bieber could end up coming back, making a start at the big league level, and you could be asking yourself, oh, is there going to be interest in Shane Bieber at the deadline? Should we make that trade?
I mean, I think now is the time to be having some of these discussions. I think Bieber is one of the names that I don't know why people have been hesitant to bring him up, but he would fall exactly into this category. He's got value. Other teams would take a Shane Bieber. And by the way, the rotation right now for the Guardians looks good. Like you're in a good spot with the rotation that you can get away with selling off a Shane Bieber, getting something back in return. And that now I was with Bieber, I'm talking more about maybe an actual at bat that can help you out this year.
So that's what's so fast. I'm so glad you brought that up. With Class A, you might get a bat who might be tangentially ready, but you're not really sure until you see him in Cleveland. I don't think they're trading Kwan, but if they were to put Steven out there, You're getting a bulk of what you get is probably going to be a year to 2 years away. With Bieber, you could tell somebody in the, hey, you're a team with a surplus of bats. You need an arm. We've got Bieber for half a year. You've got player X for a couple years of control, but who's maybe just a good player. Let's make that swap. And
for sure,
that would be something that again, would not be buying or selling would be, I do think though, a couple more weeks of this, and I think you would be silly not to sell. As much as it's going to upset everybody, I get it. Nobody wants to sell. Yeah, man, you get another Manzardo for Aaron Civale type offer for Bieber, you should probably do it. You know, if somebody knocks your socks off for Class A, you should probably do it.
I think they're going to start looking at some of these things, especially if you get another couple of weeks like this. It's such a interesting spot that they're in right now because obviously they're not playing good baseball, but there's so many ups and downs in a baseball season anyway. So you're trying to figure out, is this just one of these down moments in the season, or is these one of these moments that is just going to bear out for the rest of the year and you'll be looking back now and being like, oh yeah, of course this team wasn't very good.
And what's crazy about it is I think this trade deadline is going to set the Guardians free one way or another. I think if you make a couple trades where you're sending guys out, I think it might set some of the young players free from the pressure of trying to win every day, and they might go on a little Tigers-esque run at the end of the next season.
Well, and they can still win this, by the way, in many ways. Like, I mean, if you think about it, if they just start calling up some of their prospects that they already have, you can send a lot of guys out if you start calling up some of the prospects, and we get to see some of the younger players and actually show some infusion of youth and then also something with these at-bats.
Well, in specific to what you just said there, also, you might make the right trade and might set them on fire.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think the only thing that probably doesn't do anything is doing nothing. I think that's the spot where if you're just like, no, we're going to run it back. You know, we're going to let Lane and Carlos hit free agency on their lonesome, and we'll see about Shane Bieber's. That might be the thing that it's like, okay, no movement might actually be the worst way, because I don't think it'd be the worst thing for that locker room to have some sort of shakeup.
Yeah, inactivity, seems like it's not likely. But we need to then also put in the idea, tiny moves, do they count the same way as well? Like I looked at it yesterday, I was capping out the buyers and the sellers in recent years because it's kind of been a little one-sided, and last year I could only find two teams that didn't make some sort of move of some, and not even consequence, just some move and adjusting their team at the deadline. Like teams are, they are, buyers and sellers are making these little transactions.
So with that said, it was an on-schedule, unintentional trolling of Cleveland Guardians fans that did not stop any of the frustration. Chase DeLauder was out of the Guardians lineup, the AAA lineup last night, and it immediately had people jumping to, oh, is he coming up? Only to find out that was on schedule. He just needed a day off.
Which is common with him. He takes his days off every now and then. He hasn't played four games in a row.
Was last
night going to be his fourth game in a row?
No, I thought he just played four games in a row, and then he had the night off.
Oh, I got to adjust that now. He hasn't played five games in a row yet, Nick.
That's true. It still might be four because my math is very sketchy at this point. I just think...
You think that was a troll job?
No. It was an unintentional troll job. Sometimes things just are planned. And it doesn't matter whether they were planned or not. It just pisses people off anyways.
Stinks. I got the excitement attached to it all. And I feel so bad for people. And by the way, on our Facebook page, because we talked about this topic earlier in the show, and it got put up on one of the Facebook things. And some of the comments people keep bringing up, they keep suggesting. And Randy, your guy Randy, by the way, who I'm convinced doesn't listen to the station and only comments on Facebook things now, he commented and was like, well, no, this is the same thing that's been happening for years. They can't bring him up yet because of the finances. And then that's all at play. No, we're past that point. We've been past it for about 10 days now. June 17th was the cutoff. Now we're into the area where it doesn't cost them any money to go ahead and make this move. Like, these are the times that you can bring this up. It's not a matter of finances. It's not a matter of dollars and cents. It really isn't. It's just getting them up here and starting the clock, but it's not based off of this season because of the Super 2 and everything in play.
If I may, I do think there's a defense of the Guardians' actions that I don't think is going to make anybody feel better, but I think one thing I think they're probably keenly aware of is Chase DeLauder is only going to keep Guardians fans happy for so long.
Well, and so I do wonder if they bring up DeLauder, and is a week from now we're just going to be yelling for Brito and Kafis. Like, how long does that excitement really exist and last for Guardians fans? And I just think we live in a society of I want it now, and so like we'll get DeLauder up there, we'll be happy, but how long does that last, Nick? 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, even if he mashes, and he might mash and be awesome, we'll still be like, okay, wait, so that was the right thing. Do you see what he just did for your lineup? What do you think Kafis could now do for the lineup? And we'll just keep, and we should, by the way. I'm not saying don't. We should do this, but we're going to get greedier and greedier.
It mashes as long as, it works, it keeps for Guardians fans, and it keeps them happy as long as he mashes and they win.
Because all you're going to do is tell them and basically tell the Guardians why they were dumb for keeping him down for so long. Like, you see how the Guardians are in a weird spot where they can't really win out of this scenario. Because either he comes up and he's not very good at baseball and they get to do the, well, we were right for X amount of reasons, but then he's not very good at baseball and that doesn't help anybody. Or he comes up, is awesome, and then all the fans say, this is exactly why we told you to bring him up, and this is why you should be bringing other guys up as well.
I think that's a small minority. I don't think there's going to be a lot of I told you so, because I think people are just going to be relieved if he comes up and you're winning.
We live in an I told you so world.
216-474-0092. How long does calling up Chase DeLauder keep Guardians fans happy when it happens in the downside of the Caitlin Clark experience in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan?
I wouldn't expect him to come out and be like, I want to do it exactly the same way that LeBron did. That would kind of surprise me a little bit. But it is interesting how they have tried to, you know, LeBron was very much, it was LeBron's team, and LeBron dominated in many ways. And he had nights where Kyrie obviously did what he had to do. But like, Donovan is not shy of sharing the spotlight, and that's why I think he brings up his guys.
I just think it's interesting of like, it's interesting. I was trying to figure out what he meant by I'm not going to do it like LeBron, because there's a couple connotations there. The immediate connotation, when I just saw the text, so obviously that's the first time we heard it, but when I just saw the text, I thought, does he mean in terms of player power and saying who stays and who goes? Because I think that's a part of it that I think if there's something that Cavs fans enjoy about this run, that like they didn't care when the title happened, but once LeBron was, after the title, the LeBron GM jokes became bountiful. I think there were people who were happy when LeBron the GM, in their perception, was no longer here.
I mean, LeBron, everything that came with LeBron seemed to be very tiresome outside of then the winning part of it, which was awesome. You put up with the other parts of it because the winning happened and because the winning was so cool. I looked at it like this was, you know, we're more of a shared team than maybe what LeBron's teams were.
And by the way, you're not wrong about the exhausting nature of it. I always thought the exhausting nature of the LeBron stuff was just the weight of championship expectations every year.
Oh, yeah, this Cavs team definitely doesn't have that. In fact, we talked about how they almost get overlooked. Like, even today, in, like, national conversations about who's some of the best teams in the East, people just kind of, they throw the Cavs in like it's an extra, like it's a bonus part of the conversation.
And
it should be the feature.
And so it's funny, like, I don't think we can separate from the things that exhausted us with LeBron from the things we actually liked or just were neutral on. Because once we got to he left Cleveland again, there are people who just turned that into, no, the whole thing wasn't worth it, or the whole, you know, it turning into something that it wasn't. I did find the constant championship expectation to be exhausting. At the same point, like, I do find this, I don't think they're a middling team. I don't want to make it seem like that. There's a part of me that finds this situation a little exhausting. Like, the consistent, like,
I think it's exhausting because you expect more and you want more, but you know what this team is capped at.
And maybe I'm just more used to that. But, like, there's a part of me that, like, man, I'm happy that Donovan has his guys back. And who knows? Maybe Donovan knows there's going to be a trade made, and this is ground fire to make it seem like he didn't have anything to do with it. I don't know.
Oh, that's an interesting call.
But at the same point, like,
because that would be what you do before all of a sudden the code red gets called out.
In fairness, like,
hey, I was the guy telling you I loved all this.
Love everyone. I don't think Donovan's that guy. LeBron's actually much more that guy.
I don't know. I mean, Donovan does have some LeBron traits to himself. I mean, JB Bickerstaff isn't the coach here anymore.
Yeah, but he never embraced JB.
That's the point.
In the second half of the season. Well, no, my thing is, like, he never would have been like, man, we got JB, we got, you know, JA, we got Evan, whereas...
My point is, when it seemed like it soured with Donovan and JB is when JB all of a sudden was out the door.
Okay.
That's what I'm getting at.
He's like a coach killer.
I didn't call him a coach killer.
He killed one coach?
For some reason, NBA people take that as such a great offense. It's like, oh, I'm called a coach killer. It's like, yeah, I know. It's like, it's okay. It's fine. But no, like in that instance, yes, that was very LeBron-esque in that he clearly didn't like the coach anymore. And then all of a sudden, the coach was out the door.
And the problem with LeBron is he just never liked any of the coaches.
Yeah, LeBron's got a real problem with coaches. Yeah. Unless you host a podcast
with
him.
He's kind of like a serial dater of NBA coaches. Like, he'll let you get close. Not going to let you get that close.
To be fair, he was swiping right on a lot of really bad coaches.
Well, in fairness, he was given David Blatt. Anyone would seem better than David Blatt. In fairness, he was given Frank Vogel, okay NBA head coach, and then Darvin Ham, who I think is a very nice guy, but I don't think we ever really figured out what he could do as a head coach.
Yeah, it was bad.
Although he did try and get Eric Spoelstra fired. So,
yeah, the one guy that he got that was great, he then was like, I don't know if I like this guy.
I think that was all.
It was early. It was early Spoelstra, though.
I also think it was in return for Pat Riley stealing his cookies.
That might have been part of it.
It was like, oh, you want to go after my cookies? I'm going to go after your cookie. I'm going to go after your guy.
Dwayne Wade said that story as if that was a very serious thing. Like, as if that was the bridge too far.
I mean,
don't take a man's cookies. We got in that plane, and the people that make us cookies said, we can't make you cookies anymore, and he got mad.
If you're tightly wound and... let's say LeBron is, you have to be that great. And the one solace, the one thing you have on the planet is a cookie. And then the guy in charge takes the cookie away. It's at, like, the ridiculous part here is Pat Riley.
I mean, you don't have to tell me twice.
I mean, because I'm pre-diabetic. I'm just pointing out Pat Riley could have done anything other than take a man's cookie.
We both are the type of people, I don't want to speak for you. I'm definitely the type of person that if I need a little bit of just happiness, my happiness meter just needs to go up just a little bit. Food helps with that.
Oh, it's like.
Food helps a great deal with that.
By the way, I would not have taken offense to that.
I just didn't want to.
I think it's pretty clear that food brings me happiness.
I like to give you the benefit of the doubt. I don't
know. You didn't want to out and out fat shame, and I appreciate the hell out of you for it.
Nice try, fatty.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than, like, when I've been really, really good for a couple weeks and I just have, like, a day where I just... And then Vanessa's like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, I'm damn right, I'm sure. Like, it just that extra little bit of judgment that's like, I didn't need that in that moment.
Oh, I like that Vanessa's like, are you sure? I always tell Elise that she enables me in many ways. Because I'll be like thinking I'm all right and then everything's good. And she'd be like, hey, we could get pizza tonight. And I'm like, wait, this isn't helping. This isn't helping.
We have some of those moments too. But mostly when I'm really, really good, like, I'm actually in a really good spot right now where I just haven't had sugar for 2 weeks. And I'm not saying that for any other reason than to say this. Like, there was a moment where I felt really, like, Wednesday was just, I was starting to get whatever I've had this week. I was starting to get run down, and I've been stressed about, you know, some other stuff, and just full-blown stressed. And I was driving home feeling bad for myself, and I was like, I want some ice cream. And then I was able to say, no, you don't. You just feel bad about yourself right now. That's good.
That is good.
But usually, if somebody else says it, it's like, you say it again, I'm going to snap your neck.
Mm.
Yeah.
How it works in my house is I'll have that moment in the car where I'll have that the same thing, like, I want ice cream, and then I'll come home, and somehow my wife knows that that's the thought that I had, and she'll be like, oh, got you a bowl of ice cream. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't helping.
Yeah, this is, you and I are both, I think, very, very similar in that we'll, like, our energies will mirror each other often.
Yeah, we've joked about that before, the idea that, like, when I come in and I'm a little sluggish, you are also sluggish. And when we both feel like we're just, like, ready to roll, then it matches that as well.
And it makes sense that we would have that with our wives as well. Because, you know, like, there are times where I'm like, I think we should get some ice cream tonight. And Vanessa was like, I was literally just thinking about that.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? True love. True love, true friendship.
That's what it is right there.
And that's what people say about us.
So you can see how LeBron got mad with the cookie. Because I would also get mad with the cookie.
I would just be more mad. It's like, you don't take that away from me. I'm just more of a defiant person naturally.
Well, your boss shouldn't be the one telling you what you can and cannot eat, even though their job is. Like, Phelps one time went off. I know, Phelps went off. On the idea that Zion Williamson, like, being a basketball player, you should be in shape. He's like, the one thing you should be, if you're a basketball player, you should be in shape. Maybe you shouldn't have the Doritos. Maybe you shouldn't have the Pepsi. Maybe you should just put those things down. Do the endorsements for them all day, but, like, then maybe don't eat them as much, because you should be in shape, because you need to be if you're going to be a basketball player, right? And I understand that there are certain things NBA teams should be able to tell athletes that's different than me and you, but, like, the concept of somebody being like, you can or cannot eat that, don't love.
Mac, you're gleaming on the mic there.
I was going to say, too, like, especially for LeBron, where historically, like, the guy doesn't pay for anything. And so if he's getting on the plane and it's the people that they give you those cookies on the plane.
Well, it was so they work with the team is the stories. And so he developed a relationship with these people that they work on the team and they're the ones that the team has. And then they got a kick out of making him these cookies. Like that,
Pat Riley even took their joy.
That was kind of how Dwayne Wade had told the story, was that it was almost as if it was just as important to them as it was to LeBron, because there was like a kinship attached to them being like, LeBron, we made you these cookies because we know you love them, and then LeBron loving them.
So back to Donovan Mitchell's comments about
steals joy.
There is, I think it is interesting that there was, it wasn't a defensiveness, and I don't want to paint it that way.
LeBron's not flying Delta is the point here.
But there was. I'm not going to make that line. But I do think it's interesting that multiple times when asked and compared to the 2016 or the 2014 through 2018 Cavs, this team has really gone out of their way to try and, you know, like, praise them and say we want what they had, but also distance themselves from it in a very interesting way that I don't.
Well, so they should. And here's why I find it incredibly interesting. And here's where the Cavs, I think, they shouldn't take blame for this, Nick. But I do think they do have to take some culpability. You can't walk 3 feet in that building without seeing something honoring the 2016 Cavs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Cavs have not removed themselves from the shadow of what that 2016 team is. And they shouldn't. They should embrace LeBron and everything that was and how cool and awesome and great it was. But, I mean, it's very similar to if you're on the Cubs right now and you go around Wrigley Field and everything's the 2016 World Series title because it's the first time in 100 years and it mattered so much. Same thing here with the Cavs fans and with what that meant. Like, and that's hard. That's hard as a player to kind of, I don't know, erase that.
I mean,
like, Donovan's got no association with the 2016 Cavs.
So I think I kind of got to go to this. My rebuttal, let's say Donovan went to Dan or Kobe or anyone and said, can we get a little more celebration of us up? I think my rebuttal right now, and I'm not trying to be a chotch about it, would be, hoist a banner.
I think he would say that's fair. I think he would say that's 100% fair. But it doesn't take him out of the shadow of the 2016 title and what that meant for not only people in this area, but what that also meant for the franchise. And anytime you're in that building, the people I'm talking to right now, you guys know it, you can't go 3 feet without seeing some acknowledgement of what that title was and how great it was.
You're right. But I gotta say, maybe that's why you need to be a little bit more LeBron. Like, you were, like, when he was done in Utah, he was just done in Utah. And I don't think it was simply about just topping out in the second round of the playoffs. But if Donovan, listen, I know maybe he's already a little walking on treacherous waters here because he's got, murked JB Bickerstaff, as it were.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, there's a part of me that goes, like, hey, Donovan, if you know you'd play better with a 6'7" wing who can shoot the three, maybe go tell him that. Like, you don't have to go full LeBron. Very few do go full LeBron. Maybe we need more of that.
Maybe. I just wonder if he's tired of the LeBron convo, because it's an association to the team, but it's not an association to his team. Almost like, you know how LeBron said he was chasing the ghost of MJ? I wonder if Donovan is almost chasing the ghost of LeBron here.
He is. And by the way, I don't think it's as simple as just win a championship and you catch him or surpass him. I don't even think you need to do that, because I think there are people who enjoy the lack of complication with Donovan that you didn't have with LeBron, or that, you know, Donovan feels more like your star and LeBron was everybody else's star. At the same point, like, man, you want to get out of the second round of the playoffs, maybe tell him what you need. And it doesn't have to go and say, trade that dude, trade that dude, trade that dude. But let's be honest, there's the personal relationship which Donovan has with his teammates, which he stepped into an existing ecosystem, and he thrived. That's without overpowering it. That's incredibly commendable. But if you really want to make your own legacy here, I can't imagine 3 years in, Donovan doesn't look at this and go, "We're just going to run it back again."
Well, I mean, especially after what we watched in the postseason, where Donovan was just taking over himself, and he clearly felt like nobody else on that team was going to be able to offer him up something. I mean, he did the thing that he was scared of doing in that postseason, and that is trying to take over like he did in Utah.
So, like, there's a part of me that I don't want him to be anybody but Donovan Mitchell. There's another part of me that goes, you know, you could learn something from LeBron by just being a little bit more like, hey, guys, I'm 29. I want to win an NBA championship, and I want to do it here. I love the guys we have. It's not about I don't like them. But, I mean, we've seen, listen, there's the personal and professional relationships of Darius and Donovan, and I think both are in a great spot now. I don't think the professional relationship was good a year ago because Donovan wasn't comfortable in the role he was given and felt like he wasn't a big, Darius didn't feel like he was a big enough part of the success.
Right, to the point where Darius has denied it, but we know what we know, where Darius was trying to get his way out for a stretch.
And so I kind of think, like, man, maybe this is the offseason where if you look at this and go, well, we've done it for 3 years and we've topped out in the second round two of the 3 years and we've been genuinely swept when we've been ousted all 3 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe I do go and say, you know, maybe it's Jarrett or Darius. Just make a move so we can get different pieces around here. Instead of, I cannot buy.
Well, maybe he has said that, though. I mean, there's, again, take it for whatever it's worth, but they were involved in the Durant conversations.
I think if he had said that, I mean,
because the end result of the Durant conversations was Durant didn't want to come here.
So your point is valid, but then the summer of almost won't happen. If Donovan wants changes, there will be changes. Instead of just, hey, we got to see what more we can get out of this Craig Porter Jr. kid. Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
But now that, again, in a year's time, I don't want to hear Donovan upset that they haven't made those moves.
Right. Because
you could have pushed this thing wherever you wanted it.
I think this is very solid criticism if it were to be 5 or 6 months from now.
216-474-0092.
I mean, it's solid now, too, but, you know, like 5 or 6 months from now as well.
Yeah, but it's more solid then.
That's right. That's right.
What do you make of Donovan's comments about not being like LeBron, not running this like LeBron, and which part of this do you think extends to the LeBron part of it? We've got, in case you missed it, coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.